K-Boot Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor La Segua, running February 7th to March 2nd at the Milagro Theater in Portland. La Segua is a Central American cautionary folktale of a young, beautiful woman whom philandering men encounter on their way back home. Her beauty decays into a horror that drives the men mad. The play tells the story of a beautiful woman who was haunted by the specter of La Segua and takes a hard look at Costa Rican values, including ambition, hypocrisy, and follows themes of machismo, vanity, and narcissism. Again, that's La Segua, running February 7th to March 2nd on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights at 7:30 and Sundays at 2 p.m. at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Ivan Carmona. His show Imprint of Place with Liz Robb is on at PDX Contemporary Art from February the 6th through March the 12th, 2019. Thanks for coming into KBOO, Ivan.
Thank you for having me.
So you're primarily a work in ceramics. This show is a series of ceramic pieces. They're all related in form. They're actually all the same height. So as you see them in the gallery, they look like part of a set. And they're bright colors, very matte in finish. And they could be vases. So you look at them and think, oh, these are interesting shaped vases. But when you pick them up, the hole goes all the way through. So they're not strictly, you know, what we think of as craft. These are conceptual forms. Just tell us a bit about the title, Imprint of Place, and how it relates to the work.
Imprint of Place is interesting title. I was invited to the show in the last minute. And I have this body of work already made, related into my birth or my place I grew up in, Puerto Rico. I grew up in Puerto Rico, in the island of Puerto Rico. And it's inspired by nature. Also the density of the island, the density of vegetation, the intensity of color too. So it's my imprint of my place. The place I grew up.
Mm-hmm. The pieces, when they look sort of like maybe the silhouette of a face or the silhouette of a body, you know, the profile. And when you put two together, they make a kind of negative space that is interesting too. Could be, you could see it as a river, this gap between them, or you know, another human body. They actually remind me of the sort of optical illusion of, you know, you put two kind of chalice shapes together, yeah, and they look like a face. What were you thinking about the way the two pieces, I mean, there are several pieces, so they could be combined, but the way they interact?
The pieces inspire about the hills and the curve of the mountains, and it's put in different perspective to create more inspiration, abstraction from it. And actually, it's our interaction with nature. We, as a human, identify with the curve of the body, the curve of the nature, the curve of the seed pods, and the curve of the leaves of the trees. So it's really interesting relationship how we humans identify for to those soft curves of nature and how we identify to nature.
Mm-hmm. So when I looked at the pieces, I thought of faces first because some of them seem to have chins. But am I wrong to think of that first, or do you guide people to?
No, I'm when I put them together, some of the pieces came out at the same times when I work in two pieces at the same times, and I see that negative space interaction with it. So when you see that silhouette interaction, is really interesting. But for me, it's mostly to symbolize or connect to the riverside and how they move in harmony to each other, how to respond to one side of the river to the other. And also humans interact in that way. When you put the two faces together, you can see that negative space in between and that tension that create that negative space.
Mm-hmm.
So yes and no, it's still related to the human form, human figure, because the form is standing up and stands going horizon. And I have a background in the human figure, so probably still my signature print on the form until people maybe see human faces in
mm-hmm. it. So if you were to take a cross section, or at least the opening at the top, if the listeners think of them as a vase, the opening is usually an oval.
Mm-hmm.
With parallel sides. What kind of oval is that? But like a bathtub shape.
Yes.
And then the shape often tapers in. There might be a joint, and then they take a kind of 90-degree turn.
Mm-hmm.
They're usually wider at the base, obviously, so they don't fall over. And but they're all the same height. So you conceive them as a series. Is that right?
I see him as a series because this work is a small scale. So when I start to make them and kind of line it up together, have more sense of presence, have this powerful connection with that when they're all together. And it's mostly because I'm trying to convey the sublime of nature through it. And you can only have that intensity of the sublime where you are in the forest, where you're into nature, and you're completely surrounded by it. And the moment I group them all together, I think you have the same sensation of the sublime.
Mm-hmm. So say a little bit about that nature in Puerto Rico. You're not talking about around the big city. You're talking about the north of the island. Is that right?
I live in the northwest of the island for a really long time, mostly when I grew up there. And Puerto Rico is a tropical island, so it rains a lot. It's really sunny, beautiful, but really intense of vegetation and color. Also, we have the rainforest El Yunque, and I live near there.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly it's bright and sunny, and in a few moments, it's just pouring rain.
Mm-hmm.
We're bouncing drops of rain to the ground. And that intensity is what I try to convey to my work.
Mm-hmm.
During that emotional intensity, of color intensity, visual intensity, and the vase, that open space almost, the vase kind of shape is almost like a collect something, like collect water, collect emotions to transmit into the form.
Mm-hmm. So the what are the colors you see in nature out there apart from dark green?
Mostly dark green, different hues of greens. The flowers, the colors more intense because they have more supplies of earth and water. So intense yellow ochres, reds, oranges, and I found this color materials for ceramics that kind of replicate almost the intensity and deep, rich colors. And it's really satisfying to find something that's related to home and adding to the pieces.
Mm-hmm. So you use this color, it's called Amoco, and it's the end effect is these vessels are very matte, there's no shininess about them. So the colors are very saturated. I feel like the color is everywhere on every surface, there's no light reflection. And you use, for instance, you use a very rich blue and a very rich yellow. Tell me about how you made those choices.
I've been using those commercial materials for ceramics for a while, but because so intense, I never have the courage to use it in the really large objects because it could be really intense. And finally, I got the courage to do it and try it. And the visual impact of it was amazing because I'm getting a reminding at home. And the colors I made specifically to get that intense color. And it's interesting how by pushing the range of temperature, you can get something completely different. So really matte opaque to a little satin with a little sheen of color. And some of their color texture-wise are more rough than the others.
Mm-hmm.
And that depends how much I push the temperature in the kiln.
Is that the finish called a glaze in this case?
It's called on the glaze. So you have to put a clear glaze to turn into shiny. Mm-hmm. But in my case, I don't add the clear glaze.
So you take the bisque object that's been fired once. Mm-hmm. And what do you do, paint it with a brush or a spray?
I paint it with a brush. I usually put from 3 to 4 coats to get that bold, intense color. And it's a game. Some colors are more difficult than the others because some of them show the brush strokes. And it depends on the piece and the texture of the piece. It's a discommunication of what I want from them and what the piece has given to me. This is a level of control of ceramics that you can control maybe 60 to 70%, and the rest is up to the kiln.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you get amazing stuff, and sometimes you just keep trying.
So once you've painted, say, 4 layers of yellow, do you fire it again, or is it done already?
Sometimes, if I'm lucky, with just a second firing will be enough, and sometimes, like the pink form, I fire 5 times to get that bright pink that I'm looking for.
Hmm. So the color, does the color change with each firing?
Yes. It could change a little bit, and sometimes the layers that they put on it.
Mm-hmm. So these are very, the shapes are minimal. They're smooth. They're simple. And it, you know, it fits right in with PDX, where they love minimalism. When you were making them, you said you were inspired by Alexander Calder, who everyone kind of knows as a mobile artist. You know, you see his mobiles everywhere. And just tell us a bit about what he did that particularly you like.
Growing up in Puerto Rico, I knew I always going to be an artist and be in sculpture. I was always interested in playing with the clay from the ground of it. I didn't have much information about art and information about clay. But growing up and looking to art book, I found out Alexander Calder. And I was really interested in how he created those mobile kind of fighting with gravity, but also remind me about nature, about trees. And reading about the titles, how they're not mostly related to nature, some of them, and some of them more into animal and more abstraction of nature. I found him incredibly productive artist, from making drawings, jewelry, and large sculpture.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is Isamu Noguchi. And Noguchi made everything in art, from sculpture to functional. And
I think everyone knows his coffee table, which is a series of ovals and,
yes,
and boomerang shapes, you know, and it's copied everywhere and it's in every movie. It's a signifier of sort of high living and tasteful design.
Very sculptural, very functional, yeah. Yes.
And how did you discover Noguchi?
Noguchi was through books too, actually visiting libraries and saw the covers and saw these biomorphic forms and how related even to my work it is, how related to nature his work it is, and this nice curve, but make mostly his work made from stone or steel or really hard materials, and how he warm those materials and how cohesive he make those work, and fall inspired about how versatile he is to make it functional work. It looks like sculpture, but also his lamps, and is idealist artists, both of them, how they can accomplish so much in a lifetime. Mm-hmm. So they are inspiring me a lot.
Yeah, when the artists like that who are very productive, but they produce on a big scale and they can do big public work and they sort of get things done. That can be as inspiring as, you know, just the formal quality of their work. Is your ambition to be able to produce on that scale?
Not to that scale, but to how productive and how they don't limit themselves. That they can, the meaning to be an artist, to do whatever you want, basically, and communicate whatever you want. So they create this totally commercial line, but also this artistic line that both connected but separate. And I found that really difficult and interesting, because as you saw my studio today, I developed this line of functional completely different from my artistic work, but still the language still there. Mm-hmm. The textures, the colors still there. So that inner creative of the artist still there, like Noguchi tables and lamps and functional work to his artistic work.
Your studio is on Thurman. What is it, 27th and Thurman?
28th and Thurman.
Yeah. And so it's one of those kind of looks like a storefront gallery, but you go in and there's a warren of studios back there. What's it called and how many people are in there?
It's called Thurman Studios, and it's been a studio since 1973. Mm-hmm. Mostly by that time, ceramics, and now we have painters, mixed media artists, and potters.
Mm-hmm. So just to look around there, you can tell everyone is very professional. They're sort of very tidy. They have one of everything. You know, you might share a few facilities, but everyone has all their own kind of stuff. And then you go out the back and there's like a room full of kilns, and it just sort of feels like a kind of home for ceramicists. And you went to OCAC, right? The College of Art and Craft?
Yes, I graduated from OCAC.
Mm-hmm. With a specialty in ceramics?
Bachelor's in fine art with a concentration in ceramics.
Mm-hmm. So you came here and came to Oregon in a kind of a roundabout way. Tell us about how you were studying art, and then you realized you needed to get a degree for some reason.
Before coming to Portland, I was an artist in Puerto Rico. I started studying ceramics in 1993. Was my first class when I have my own car, my money to pay for the classes. I have a stable job, not art related. And I started taking classes at Escuela de Artes Plásticas in San Juan, Puerto Rico. And when I took ceramics, I fell in love with it. I knew that's what I meant to be. I love the plasticity. I love how forgiving clay could be. And I never found a materials that I can do the same with clay.
Forgiving as in you make a mistake, you just kind of smear over it.
Yeah, you just scar smear and put it back together. So it's really experimental and really in the moment, and I enjoy that from clay a lot. I took multiple workshops. I found my first teacher and mentor, Roxana Jordan, and she invited me to work at her studio. By that time, she cannot afford to pay me or me paid her. So we have this trade-off. She teach me everything about the art movement in Puerto Rico, ceramics-wise, how to connect to galleries and let me use her studio space and materials, and I will help her making her work and preparing materials for her own use. And slowly I get introduced by art galleries, shows, make a name in Puerto Rico and start to be represented by a gallery in Puerto Rico. Been there for a while. I have a full-time job as a pharmacist technician, part-time and an artist. It was really intense having both because I want to pursue art. It's really hard to be an artist in Puerto Rico. It's a small island, a lot of artists, a few collectors. So the competition is really high. I make half my first show and I thought that I knew a lot. And I thought my skills was really high, but also I was tired about just doing everything by myself. Doing research, buying book, looking to online. It could be really intense just trying to learn everything by yourself. And because my teacher can accomplish much to teach her technique, teaching how to approach clay, I have some limits on it because she have her own aesthetic. And after that, it was up to me to create my own language in clay and art.
So what you do, you went looking online for a place to get study?
Yes, I looking online to places to study in the U.S. and one of my choices was Kansas City, and the second choice was Portland, Oregon. I'd never been here, Portland or Kansas City. I couldn't afford to travel to those places just to see the school like they invited me to do. So I do Google Earth. I just looked at pictures, did a lot of research, spent a lot of time online, and I saw Portland, the hills, and how green it is, and the rain. And people complaining about the rain, but I felt so beautiful because I grew up near the rainforest. And I thought, that's easy. And I saw the winter is not that bad. Snow was freaking me out a little bit. And I took my chances. I'll apply with thinking maybe I'm not going to be accepted. And I got accepted with a scholarship.
To OCAC?
Oh, to OCAC.
Right. How many years of study was that?
4 years.
And so you just pitched up in Portland? Did you have to find a job to make a living?
No, I have some savings. People put Puerto Rico put together a show for me to get money. So I sell mostly my work, also all my book collections, my equipment and materials, and get money from that and have a scholarship and just move here. And I thought that the last case was I just go back home. And took my chances, and it's worth it. I graduated from them. I worked there. I teach community classes, a studio school, we call it, and also teach summer camp for kids.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So you'd be teaching like pinch pots and coil pots to 15-year-olds or whatever, 10-year-olds?
Yeah, from first grade to 9.
Oh, wow. But you're actually still inspired by the simplicity of those early... You know, the introduction to ceramics, you still feel that's there in your work now with these vase shapes?
Yes, I'm using very basic technique, pinch pot technique and coil building technique. And that's what I teach to the kids is there's not much construction techniques in ceramics. You can evolve to call it something else to make it more fancy, but coil building, slab construction, pinch pot is mostly... It you master one or three, and you can do anything.
So just so these pieces they're on sale in the gallery. They're around like $400 or $500, but you also do, which is pretty low for you know PDX. But you also do commercial stuff. So you do like butter dishes with this what you call a crawling glaze.
Yes.
So the glaze beads up. So you have a kind of a grip when you pick up the ceramic butter dish. Doesn't it fly out of your hand? You do, what other commercial pieces do you do?
I do butter dishes, candlestick, cups, bowls,
mm-hmm.
Some versions of functional flower vases.
And then you also have more abstract stuff, like there's a big Wellington boots set on a brick, right?
Yes. That piece is called There's No Place Like Home. It's a series of work I made related to Puerto Rico too,
mm-hmm.
specifically to objects I grew up around my house. My dad built our home in Puerto Rico with concrete, so he had all these tools that mm-hmm. he only used because it was his tools and male-related tools.
So this boot has cement in it, and then there's a piece of rebar sticking out, and you've gold-leafed that.
Yes.
So it's sort of like a tribute to your dad.
A tribute to my dad. In the moment we grow up and we are grow old enough to help my dad, the job of my brother and I was mixing concrete and bringing the concrete with buckets to him. And he only have two pairs of boots of one size. And the size was size 12 because I'm the baby or the little of the house, but my feet was the big one. So I was a size 12, my brother size 11, and my dad was size 9. So it was funny that we only have one single size of boot, so we get all three can use it. So my dad has his huge rubber boot, and it was walking kind of uncomfortable, but that was the compromise, so we can all three can help him to build their home.
So the work like that is not in the show, but that's what more of you, that's what you're doing at other times, more conceptual work. But this is a very sort of tight show with a limited set of forms and contrasting colors. It's like you built this for a show.
This piece is related to this show. Yes, it's more modern, more minimalist. Same content of home. In this case, mm-hmm. nature, Puerto Rico. My past work is really more to family. And I think people would identify, Portland people would identify with sense of love of nature. Puerto Rico and Portland is pretty much the same. So if you go to Puerto Rico, you're going to see what I'm talking about.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Ivan Carmona. His show with Liz Robb is called Imprint of Place, and it's on now at PDX Contemporary Art from February the 6th to March 2nd, 2019. Thanks very much for coming into KBOO, Ivan.
Thank you for having me.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us. KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operation.
KBOO es un orgulloso copatrocinador de la temporada de conciertos de Portland Folk Music Society 2018-2019. Tish Hinojosa es la artista principal para el concierto del 15 de febrero, el cual se llevará a cabo en la iglesia Redwood Friends en Portland. Las canciones de la compositora y cantante Tish Hinojosa son una mezcla de americana, western swing y latino pop. Escribe de todo, desde canciones de amor hasta canciones de protesta, baladas y canciones de baile. Además, ha sido una artista destacada en la Casa Blanca, los límites de la ciudad de Austin y Prairie Home Companion. Nuevamente, Tish Hinojosa se presentará en el escenario de Portland Folk Music Society el viernes 15 de febrero a las 7:30 de la tarde en la iglesia Redwood Friends, ubicada en el 2901 de Southeast Steel Street en Portland, Oregon. Más información en kbu.fm en el lado derecho de la página de inicio en eventos comunitarios.
Así que vamos a retirar.